WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
So let's hear from this new album a piece called Caravanessa.
Thank you.
just heard Cara Vanessa from a new album called Mantilla, an album by Ray Mantilla, who we heard on percussion on that record, along with Jeremy Stagg on flute, Eddie Gomez on bass. Well, joining me in the studio now on Fresh Air is Ray Mantilla, who since the 1950s has played and recorded with many Latin and jazz bands, and now has this album under his own name on Inner City Records. Ray Mantilla was born and grew up in New York in Puerto Rican neighborhoods. He is part Peruvian. His early playing was with Latin and salsa bands, where he worked with people like Lou Perez and Ray Barreto. In the late 1950s and early 60s, he recorded and toured with Herbie Mann, and in 1960, he recorded with Max Roach on Roach's extended political piece, We Insist, the Freedom Now Suite. In about 1962, Ray Mantilla moved to Puerto Rico, where he lived and played for about 7 years. He played mostly hotels and TV shows and was dissatisfied with the experience musically, moved back to New York. Since moving back to the States, he's recorded with Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers, with Charles Mingus on the album Cumbia and Jazz Fusion, with David Amram on the Havana, New York record, and he took that trip to Cuba. And he's recorded with Jeremy Stagg, who is now featured on Ray Mantilla's album. The new album is called Mantilla, and again, Jeremy Stagg's on flute, Eddie Gomez on bass, Joe Chambers on drums, and of course, my guest, Ray Mantilla, is featured on percussion. It's a great pleasure to have you here, Ray. I'm really glad you could be
Thank
here
Thank you
today.
Very much, Terry. Hello, Philadelphia.
We're going to be throughout, you know, the remainder of the show listening to music from different parts of your recording career up to this date. But let's start by going backwards. When you were growing up in New York, what kinds of music were you hearing and where were you hearing it?
Well, I was brought up in the Bronx and in the neighborhood Prospect Avenue in the Bronx. That's the East Bronx. And they had, like now, the guys up in the roof playing the drums, you know, and Latin, we had the Latin stations, and at that time, Latin was going pretty strong, you know. Tito Puente had just come out with his conjunto style, mambos, you know, and Tito Rodriguez, and they were, he had his conjunto, that's with trumpets and rhythm only, you know, and Machito was out there, he came out with tanga at that time, and some of the Charlie Parker, when he was playing with the Latin, the Afro-Cuban rhythms, that was what was happening, you know, at that time. Myself, I was listening to a lot of the Cuban-orientated music, like Orquesta Aragón, and I was listening to, at that time also, Los Muñequitos, it's a group that comes from Matanceros, they call them Los Matanceros, which is a town in Cuba, you know, it's like sort of inland, and there's just rhythm groups, you know, and Los Papines, which they're on the Cuban concert, you know. We were listening to that, and mostly getting involved into the roots. It was really heavy into the roots because I had to get that down first, you know.
When did you start playing yourself?
Well, let me see, I started playing I was about 18. You know, that's a little, I don't want to tell my age, but it's something like 23 years ago, you know. And to me, it's like the very beginning because I got a chance to play with Miguelito Valdez, which is, you know, he died recently. One of our famous Latin stars, Miguelito, used to be with Exeguo Cugat. And he was one of the first ones that did Babalu. And I worked with him on Broadway for about a period of a couple of months. We did some shows, you know, and he taught me a lot of the Latin roots. Plus playing with Jose Cubello and at the time La Playa Sextet. They had Emilio Reyes at the time. And, those bands there, we were just club dating around town, you know, playing the Latin thing. Pete Terrace was also a group of that era. And we were playing around town there. And I stayed there for a while, you know. It was, like, pretty nice. I liked it.
Let's listen to a record that you made with Lou Perez.
Yes.
What year was this? Do you recall?
Well, let me see. This is something that was done only about 4 years ago, 4.5 years ago, something like that. This is not as earlier as I wanted, but this is something that I want to tell everybody. I did it at 9 o'clock in the morning. I just told Terry she couldn't believe it. It's one of this, we call this a rumba, and this is a fast rumba for dancing. And this is when the two people go out there and they start really knocking themselves out and the rhythm keeps on following them. So this is an idea of how it goes.
Okay, let's hear it.
Yeah.
cuando siento el sonar de la tumba, salgo bailando, yo soy de raza rumbera. Salgo bailando, yo soy de raza rumbera. No me interesa que la gente me critique, si yo he nacido para bailar la rumba. Y cuando siento el sonar de la tumba, salgo bailando, yo soy de raza rumbera. Salgo bailando, yo soy de raza rumbera. Bailo una rumba como quiera, bailo una rumba a mi manera. Mira que a la rumba le zumba, qué buena está la rumba, rumbero pa' bailar. Mira que a la rumba le zumba, qué buena está la rumba, rumbero pa' gozar. Bailo una rumba como quiera,
ay como quiera.
Bailo una rumba a mi manera,
a tu manera.
Bailo una rumba como quiera,
con guayabera.
Bailo una rumba como quiera,
por carretera.
Baila la rumba mulata, afuera, porque esta rumba se baila, mi mulata como quiera, mi mulata como quiera.
Just heard an excerpt of an album featuring Lou Perez, and my guest Ray Mantilla was featured on percussion. Ray, do you think, in the past, say, 20 years, that, Latin musics have gained, Latin records sell more outside of a Latin audience? You know, do you think that there's more of a, kind of broader appeal for the music?
Well, right now, yes, thanks to the efforts of, someone like me, myself. I bring the drum to all parts of the world, jazz and whatever. And the salsa music is sort of a community type thing, really. That's where it all comes out from, the roots. We're all coming from the roots in that particular thing. Now, more than ever, it's at least getting out there a little bit more, but it's a slow process, It's having to, if you listen to it, you don't understand the words. It's just the rhythm, see? But now they're recording more rhythmical things without words. And it's getting across, and it is getting wilder appeal. I'm sure Tito Puente did a lot to get it out there, with Cherry Pink and Apple Blossom. That was one of his best hits. And with Tito Rodriguez, he tried for a while with some Americanized, with Latin rhythm, It's just that you're looking for something different sometimes, and they turn to the salsa, and it's just everybody's taste. If you like it or you don't understand it, but you like it.
I think some of our listeners may be not very familiar with salsa music. What would you, could you describe what falls into the category of salsa and what you wouldn't put into salsa?
Well, salsa is completely typical. In other words, there's a certain way of playing. You have the traditional way of playing. You have your clave, and you have your everything is built around the clave, which is a two-bar phrase, And it gets a little bit intricate, as I keep explaining to you. Amram, every time we come here, we try to explain how the clave works. It's a frame that we work out of this two-bar phrase. And it goes, pop, 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 pop. That's the 3-2 clave, which is in a two-bar frame. And then they have the 2-3, pop. That's the 2-3 clave. That's what you just heard on that rumba. It's for the faster type of rhythm. But it means being understanding that. Then you play your salsa in that. Then it has the montuno. It has things that the trumpet plays at a certain time. The vocal comes in at a certain time. And it's all like really, it's in layers. And the overall thing of the whole thing is a complete swinging thing working together. The rhythm section works together. They all complement each thing they're doing. And it's, if it's done well, it's real fine. If it's done with sensitivity, see, that's what I like some of the Cuban bands, like the salsa has all various types. Now they have the charanga bands, which are the flutes and the violins, which are softer, with mellow voices, you know? That's, to me, that's one type of salsa, but that's just a word that they put here in New York, you know? That all that means is sauce, you know? And they put that in New York to commoditize, to make it more, to sell more records, I guess. It's been around for years. So you got the charanga bands, you got the conjunto bands, which is the trumpets and rhythm section. Conga, bongos, timbales, and bass, and piano. Also with maybe two singers, Guido player and a clave player, you know. And maybe three horns, four horns, trumpets. Then you have the big band, which is with the saxophones and a little larger. And so on, you know. But if you keep it traditional, and then you also have the guitar, the tres. They have that for the conjunto bands. That comes out of a Cuban-type rhythm. The son montuno, that's another type. That's a Cuban rhythm, you know. And it's all called salsa. So you have the Cuban and you have the Puerto Rican type. That's also different rhythms. You wouldn't call the plena is a Puerto Rican rhythm, which probably you don't even know. And they would say, that's salsa, but that is salsa, but that's Puerto Rican salsa, different than the Cuban salsa. So we have a lot of also the New Yorican, the kids now born in the cities, you know, they're putting in the New York sound, the New York salsa sound, which is their interpretation of the Cuban rhythm or the Puerto Rican rhythm.
How much crossover is there, you know, between musicians in New York, between, like, you know, Cuban musicians and Puerto Rican musicians and New York musicians in playing, you know, different forms of, you know, like, you know, New York Latin fusion musics?
I see. Well, let's see, on the Latin scene, they have these scenes. They have the jazz scene and you have the Latin scene. In order to stay on that Latin thing, to do the records, you have to spend time there. You have to at least spend a good part of maybe 10 years there. I mean, just,
in New York?
Well, not in New York, in any Latin thing. As far as if you want to learn the roots of being the conga, the congas. Now, the percussion, it comes like the African also. That's another way of playing, you know. The Brazilian is something else also. And the Cuban style and the Puerto Rican style, and they hold all this Latin with different styles of playing. I myself are coming out of the Puerto Rican, Cuban, New York jazz style, you know, and some with the African also. So it is a conglomeration of all the styles together. I was just mentioning before to you, remember, Terry, that all this thing about the jazz, the Latin jazz, you know, it's coming back again. And I was one of the beginners in that time with the Herbie Mann era, you know, at the beginning in 1960 when we were coming out with the Afro Jazz Sextet, and it was really happening then, and now I see it happening it all over again.
Let's go back then to the 1960s when you joined Herbie Mann. You had been playing before joining Herbie Mann in salsa bands,
right, as you were describing before.
Then you went with Herbie Mann, who was a popular jazz musician who played completely different audiences.
Yes.
What was that like for you?
Well, I tell you, it was a nice change. I really enjoyed it because I was on the Latin scene. It was beautiful, and we did real nice stuff, but I was looking to grow some more. You have to change to grow. I feel there is no progress without change, I guess. And I had this change, and I met other ways, and I saw other avenues, and for my creative abilities. And that was what really, I spent 3 years with Herbie, and we did a lot of recordings, and he took me to Brazil. We went to Brazil, and we were one of the first ones to get there and come back with the Bossa Nova, you know. I was in 61. We did an album over there also. It's very hard to get now.
What did you think of Herbie Mann's playing?
Well, at the time, Herbie was, he was a good player. And at what he was doing, what he was doing was one of the first guys that was doing it, you know. So it was pretty good. You know, at that time, we had a good rhythm section. It was a small group. At times, he would add trumpets to do the big shows, you know. There was more happening. I don't know. There was a lot of shows being put on. You know, a lot of jazz was everybody was touring. You know, so I have a good experience with Herbie.
What kinds of people came to hear you when you were playing together?
Well, we played a lot of the theaters. We'd have like big shows. I mean, we would. I remember we'd do some shows with Art Blakey and Gloria Lynn, And even Philly Joe, and he had his group over there at the Apollo Theater, I remember that. And Machito's band. And that Apollo era, with that at that particular time, was really one of the heaviest as far as I can remember. So, well, the jazz in that era was very heavy at that time, 61, you know, 60, 58, something like that. And it got heavier. And I was glad to be there with Herbie at that moment, because it made me grow more.
Let's listen to something that you recorded with him, and we're going to hear something from the album The Common Ground. Do you want to say a few words about this record and what you remember about the session?
Well, this here, I'm trying to remember, this is one of the first things I did with Herbie when I joined his Afro Sextet. They had just come back from Africa, and I joined the band, and myself and Ray Barreto. And we were doing also Olatunji. And this particular cut that I was picking is the last cut on the second side. It's called The Common Ground, which is the title track, and that's the name of the album. It's it's quite old, the record, but it's still one of the best things I've done. This cut particularly shows how all of us being rhythmic players, realizing that we have to work together, you know, Olatunji and Ray and myself. So you'll see what I mean on this tune.
It's an interesting combination, because Olatunji's an African drummer.
Right, and we had also Rudy Collins, who was the drummer, the trap drummer, and Johnny Ray played vibes, Johnny Ray, and he played some timbales, you know, and we had four trumpets. So, and Nobby Tota was the bass player. And it's very interesting, maybe.
Let's hear it. And of course, my guest, Ray Mantilla, featured on percussion on this, The Common Ground.
Thank you.
That was The Common Ground, and it's from an album with Herbie Mann and my guest Ray Mantilla and Olatunji and a number of other people. And that was recorded in, what, about 1960?
Yeah, 60, 61, something like that.
You know, there's a... I think when people hear Latin bands, there's a lot of dancing, usually, particularly with salsa bands.
Yes, in fact, that's how I started to learn how to play the conga drums. I used to go to the Palladium and dance. You know, I used to dance the cha-cha, the mambo, the guaracha, and it was in the bolero. You know, those all dances. And then I started to get the dancing, and then I saw the drumming. And I stopped the dancing for a minute and just watched the drumming. And I stayed by the drums all the time. And then, you know, I started practicing, and that's how I picked it up.
What about when you're playing, though? I guess it must be really energizing to see everybody dancing to what you're playing, but do you ever wish that on those dates that people would, like, stop dancing and just listen sometimes?
Yeah, well, at the first time we used to play a dance band, everybody would dance, and you can be playing the best stuff you ever played, and they're too busy dancing. They don't even, you know. There's certain things like that, like I like that part where people just will listen, you know, and this way you're playing for them and they can appreciate you more. When they're dancing, they're appreciating the dancing and their partner. And the guy said, oh, he played good. That was pretty good, you know. And I like the idea about playing for shows.
So I guess with Herbie Mann, it was a little bit of both.
No, with Herbie, it was just for shows, really.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yes, he didn't play much for dancing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, well, when you were playing with Herbie Mann, you left there. You want to tell us about how you left Herbie Mann?
Well, I was working with Herbie for about 3 years, and Ray had just left Tito Puente, Loretto, and he came and joined us. You know, that's when we made this record. And at that time, Ray was starting his own band. You know, he had just left Tito, and he wanted to start his own band. And I was very happy with Herbie, but he used to come down and talk to me and said, look, you got to get out of this. The thing is, go back to your roots again. Get back to your salsa thing. And I said, well, okay. He talked me out of it. He talked me out of getting out of Herbie, you know. I mean, he talked to me for a long time, and I saw something there that I was missing also, because after you spend a while coming from the roots, I figured, okay, I did that for 3 or 4 years with Herbie and freelance, and I did something with Max, too, at that time. There was a Max Roach Freedom Now suite I did at that time and various other records. I did go back and I started from scratch with Ray, but this time it was part of our group. I was a very important member of that group, and it was good to see. I spent 2 years, and we came out with that album Latino, and also the album before that made him very popular was a Watusi album. And I was playing in the charanga style there, though. I was playing timbales in this band, you know.
Do you get any similar comments now? Because, like, your new album is more of a jazz album, really, than a salsa record, for sure. You know, do you get the same kind of comments about you should go back to your roots and play salsa instead of playing?
Well, I'm just doing... This is what I've been doing recently in the last 15 years, really. I've never left the salsa thing. I mean, I've always been there because I have my records and I have my own... I listen to my people and I always go and I listen and I play, you know. So I never left it. It's just that for me now, I want to grow, so I have to use the jazz idiom right now. And eventually I will make a salsa record, but it'll be a little bit more modern that is coming out now, you know, with regular Latin players that play jazz, though, you know. It's just this is my first record. After a while, I've never thought about having my record, and it's about that time now for me. Like you see, the Latin jazz is coming back. I figured I might as well be in on it this time. As maybe with my own group. You know, I took my group that's on the record to Puerto Rico recently, in October. We did two concerts with the same group, and I was a little leery because I figured, well, it might be a little too out, you know, because it's a Latin country. They loved every minute of it. Standing ovation, they loved it. So now I know it's going to go. You know, as far as I'm concerned, I'm going to do what I'm doing now, and then I'm going to do another Latin record later on. Though they got a lot of them out there, a lot of salsa records.
You know, I guess with a Latin record, it also depends, like on like who's marketing it. Like if Fania, for instance, if you record a record for like one of the Latin companies, then it'll be in the Latin record stores, but it might not be in some of the Sam Goody stores or some of the jazz stores that deal to different audiences.
Yes, I see. Right now, the salsa thing isn't very good right now. It's being monopolized a lot, and they're recording a lot of people, and they're just flooding the market, and people are turning away. Like, when you flood and it's the same thing over and over again, you can just buy so many records, and the Latin market right now is not as stable as it used to be, you know. They're just flooding the market, and now finally just did some business. They brought some of the Cuban artists over, and they're going to be releasing some records.
Does that mean that there's gotten to be a lot of competition between Latin musicians?
Well, there's a lot of them, but there's not that much work out there. And before you know it, you see, they make their living mostly by playing these dances. So when you have all these bands out there, and these are young kids mostly, you know, they charge the price, they get less money than the older fellas, and the older guys don't want to go out there no more. So they just record, mm-hmm. and they go on trips when it's worth their while.
Well, we were talking about how you left Herbie Mann's band to play with Ray Barretta. Ray Barretta, do you want to say a few words about the record we're going to hear now that you recorded with him?
Well, this is the first record. This was on the Watusi label. You're talking about the Ray Barretta thing that was coming up now. Yes, the Watusi was come out of that. That was for him. It was his biggest hit. You know, that brought him into a different type of market. But we were ourselves, we were just playing the salsa dances. The time this band was not more than 6 months old when we recorded this, but I had been coming out of the jazz thing already. You know, I had done the Herbie Mann things, and Ray and I, we already had that down about how to put on the show, get out there and just play. Theaters was our meat, you know, and so we went out there with this band and we did very well in 2 years. We played with all the top bands from Puente to Rodriguez and to Machito, and we did our thing, you know, and I had a lot to do with I'm glad to be part of that band at that time because it was the beginning. And, you know, after that, he did a lot of things afterwards. I spent 2 years, you know. And this particular cut is the record that was Tito Puente was in the studio that day, I remember. And he was watching us. This was done in one of the Roulette studios. It's on the Tico record. It's a real old, it's one of his Ray's first, you know. And I play the timbal solo there, Cuban timbal style. It's a charanga.
Okay, so this is Ray Mantillo, and the album again is called?
Yeah, the name of the tune is called Ritmo Sabroso. It's a Louis Ramirez composition, and the name of the album was called El Watusi.
Okay, let's hear it.
Barreto viene ya, ritmo sabroso pa' gozar. Si tú lo oyes, tú verás. Ritmo te invita pa' bailar. Mira cómo va. Ritmo sabroso te invita a bailar. Ritmo sabroso te invita a gozar. Ritmo sabroso te invita a bailar. Ritmo sabroso te invita a gozar. Te invita a bailar. Te invita a gozar, te invita a bailar, te invita a gozar, te invita a bailar, te invita a gozar. Bien que bueno va, oye bien que bueno va, oye bien que bueno va, qué bueno está, qué bueno está, qué bueno está, qué bueno está. Thank you.
That was Ray Barreto with Ray Mantilla. Ray Barreto featured on congas and Ray Mantilla on timbales. Ray Mantilla is my guest in the studio now. And a little later in the show, we'll be hearing another selection from his new album called Mantilla on the Inner City record label. Well, the recording that we just heard was at the time that after you had played with Herbie Mann, when Ray Barreto said, well, get back to your roots, start playing salsa again, and then you recorded together. But while you were playing with Herbie Mann at that same time, as you mentioned, you recorded an album with Max Roach called The Freedom Now, Sweet We Insist, which is a very, particularly for 1960, a very strong political piece. There's a lot more, obviously, political music being recorded now than there was then. And you were, they were all black and into black politics, and you were Puerto Rican. And I'm wondering if there was any, discomfort there at all? Or
No, it was just I walked in on the session. It was really interesting because Max used to come down to watch Alatunji and myself work out, So when the time it came to record, he asked Tunji, would I do the date, And I came in and I did the date. Like, I walked into the studio. We said hello to everybody, and we just went to work. It was one of those things.
Can you talk a little bit about what it was like recording with Max Roach?
Well, going back at that time, Max was, he still is such a strong force. I mean, just being near him, he has all these vibrations around him, and he has some strong, energetic, when he talks to you, it's a definite, he tells you something, and it's like definite, but in a soft way, but you get the idea, So it was very, just as long as you do your work, and you're sensitive, being sensitive, you got to remember that. And it worked out fine for me. I was very surprised. In fact, at that time, this is the first time that I even I remember going into the studio, and there's a section in there that the rhythm goes into a five, and that's the first time I ever heard it. And this was a long time ago, like in '60, and the people weren't playing fives, And I just went in and did it. It was a nice vibration. It was like so spiritual, also, After the record was done, that I realized how it was going to, the impact of the whole thing. So I'm very proud to be on that record.
When you play with Olatunji, which you've done on at least two records, is there a lot that you have to figure out from one another, since you play Latin rhythms and he plays African rhythms? Do they meet on a
Yes, we meet, we meet, we meet. If we listen to each other, he plays a rhythm that, an African rhythm, and I play a Latin rhythm, and it hooks up. He just calls it something else, and I call it another name, It hooks up. The time is there. And like I say, if you work together to make something happen, and you forget about jealousies and whatever have you, and just try to make it happen, that when you have two professionals, that's what it should be, And we went through that. It was funny because, I remember at that era, I was wearing, at that time, they had the tight suits and the eyelid collars, and Alatunji would come out in his robes, very fine pillbox robe, and he'd look real sharp up there with white robes. And I'd be playing in these theaters, and boy, I was getting across, but not half as much as Alatunji. He would just hit it once or twice and place with, hey, Alatunji. Then I started getting into a sort of a show bag myself, a different type of style of playing to get the audience to applaud. There's certain ways you can do it. And I remember that experience, I don't, haven't done it since, but it's still there. It could be done, The way to milk the crowd for your applause is a certain way percussion players can do it. I used to like to sit down and just be and play,
What are the ways that you really, get the audience, milk them, as you said?
Well, in other words, I remember I used to get on top of a chair with a pair of bongos between my legs and play them. And everybody used to wrap the conga around me and go from the stage to one end to the other, or take four or five drums, and then with some big mallet sticks, I'd play four or five drums at a time. I'd have like five notes, and I'd strap an African drum around me, and I'd play, and then me and Alatunji would get together and play, and I would take off my jacket, and he would take his robe off, and everybody said, oh, everything is happening now, look out, they're going to hit each other with the drums. And we used to bring the house down. It was very interesting.
What did you think about musically?
Sometimes, I did that for a while. It started not get as good musically after a while. It started to be a lot of nothing, and I canceled out on it. I said, well, wait a minute, what am I doing? and I left. And that's when I went with Ray Barreto.
How good a register do you think is an audience's response to you, whether it's for a record or in a performance, you know? Because from what you're saying, I get the sense that a lot of times you're playing really good music and it'll go unnoticed, but if you do a little bit of showmanship, everyone will be this, like, you know, huge applause, big response, but it's not necessarily, the music isn't necessarily as good.
Well, see what it is, I'm just playing the music and I hope the people like it. Like I say, if I do a little bit more, I get more of a response. You're right. But since I had tried to never do it again, I had such a bad taste in my mouth after a while that I would never do anything to try to milk anybody's applause out of them. I mean, I was doing it honestly, you know. And it goes over now, too. You know, this is it's been years since that, you know. And
do you think audiences have gotten more sophisticated?
Some of them, yes.
Uh-huh.
I think that, yeah, if it's good, it's good. You know, you can tell what's good.
You play drums sometimes, or at least you did play drums
yes,
sometimes.
Yes, I did. When I was in Puerto Rico, I went there and because I ended up finding there were so many timbale players and conga players in Puerto Rico. Everybody played. They needed trap drummers when I went. This was about 63. I stayed there for a while. I stayed 7 years in Puerto Rico, you know. I didn't do any recordings in that time. I was trying to get my life together, you know. And my head was, I had to get that together first. So I worked the TV circuit, and I worked the jazz clubs at night, you know. And I played during the day with a large group of University of Puerto Rico had a band, and we would play concerts there and different. And that kept me going for a while till I came back to the U.S. where I met Art Blakey again.
You've played with two of, like, the greatest jazz drummers, Blakey and Roach.
That's right. When I came back, I said, I don't want to play no more drums.
What kind of space do you have, you know? Like, when you're working with you know, a brilliant drummer like Roach or like Blakey, what kind of space do you have within that for percussion?
Well, see, what he has this frontline ensemble, so we just have to accompany. And it's like in salsa too, you accompany. You know, the drum was an accompanying instrument, the conga drum, you know. So you accompany, and then you have your section where they give you your solo, you take it. It's like all proper, you know. There are some, the new music that's coming out, it's just free, you know, you can be free, the conga can be free, which I'm more into that too when I play the jazz thing with certain type of rhythm. It could be free, the pulse is still there, you know. The conga is not tying it down. That's why I switch to like different like bells and shakers and because I don't want to lock up the rhythm with the conga constantly, you know. I get off it.
Mm-hmm.
So when I have a solo, I'll get on it. So I work with my group or with various groups. I bring the congas, I bring the percussion, and I bring the timbales, and I have a variety, and I don't get tied down to any one thing. It's just an idea.
We're going to hear a record that I've never heard before or seen before, for that matter. It's a record with Max Roach and about yourself and about four other
This is Boom. This is a project that Max and Joe Chambers were hooking up when I met them in 71, and we went to Holland. This was at the Lauren Jazz Festival in 1973. This was recorded, yes. And it features Boom with Roy Brooks, Joe Chambers, Omar Clay, Warren Smith, Freddie Waits, and myself, and Max. This is one of the tunes that we played at this particular concert.
And what you're going to open up the piece that we're going to hear, which is called Giselle. Do you want to say a little more about this, the piece? We're only going to have time to hear the segment of it because it's about a 17-minute piece.
Well, this was taken live. Yeah, this was taken live, and I didn't even know we were recording it. And I had just joined the group, and Max had us working for about a week before we did this concert, you know, rehearsing every day because we were doing clinics also at the same time. This particular project is went over very well in Europe. It's an all percussion ensemble, and this record is brought out by a Japanese label called Bay State. They come from Massachusetts. I don't know if it's available here, but I think maybe in the future they're going to try to release it here in the States. And this was taken live. And it's a percussion ensemble with mallets and timpanis and gongs. And you got to listen to it.
Okay, and we will. And if you're just joining us, my guest in the studio is Ray Mantilla, who opens up Giselle Suite, which we're going to hear now, which was written by Joe Chambers and is on a record with Max Roach and a number of other percussionists. Heard the opening few minutes of M'Boom, which is a percussion album under the direction of Max Roach, and my guest Ray Mantilla was featured on Timbales and later on Kungas on that, and that was called the Giselle Suite. Ray Mantilla is in the studio with me now. In a few minutes we'll be hearing another excerpt from his new album called Mantilla on Inner City Records. How did you enjoy playing with an all percussion group of that size, that's people from coming from jazz?
Well, that was some experience. It's still a great experience. It's a lifetime experience to be there with these great percussionists, and to really believe that all the drummers that we had here, it wasn't just all drums with the timpani and the mallet instruments. It just had different colors. I had the whole Latin section. In other words, I had a section with all the Latin percussion stuff. And it was a great experience. We did the concerts, and then we went in Town Hall. We did it in Town Hall also. And we're hoping in the future it'll get back together to do a couple of tours anyway.
Where some Philadelphians may have seen you or heard you with David Amram, either through appearances at folk festivals and concerts or through the Havana, New York record that you recorded with him. That's a really different experience than anything we've talked about before, I imagine, either from, you know, the Latin scene or the jazz scene, because David Amram is not only very eclectic, but plays frequently in the folk scene, which is really something completely different.
Well, he brought me into the folk scene, and that was real nice. I thank him for that, because I really, really enjoyed it. I've had the opportunity to do the Philadelphia Folk Festival, and Mariposa, and Owen Sound. And there are a few other, I was supposed to, Winnipeg. I didn't get to do it this year because I was sick. But that's a whole new experience. And it's fantastic. And I have a lot to thank David Amram for. Like I say, you must keep growing. And that was one of my sort of personal feelings that I was growing. Like when I went to, from the Latin to the jazz, I grew. From the jazz into the folk, I grew. And I just keep on growing, and it's wonderful.
What are some of the things that strike you as being really different about, you know, playing in a folk setting than in a jazz or Latin music
setting? Well, everybody there, the way I feel when I play in the folk setting is just be honest and play the best you can, and sensible and honesty, you know, and there's no real rush to burn everybody out, you know. It's not trying to be mad. Don't get mad. Like, in other words, everything is so you're living your life sort of going along, you know. I learned that from the folk festival. And I met a lot of people, and it's going to be part of me. In fact, on my record, I have something with an acoustic guitar. It's called Inca Love Chant. And I was sort of thinking maybe the folk people that have that kind of taste would enjoy that, because it's mellow, and it's a very pretty melody, because also, coming from a Peruvian background, that's my father's side, we have very sentimental feelings. And acoustic guitars, I mean, they're just something that makes you cry sometimes, you know. And when I hit the right notes and the chords, I get like the goose pimples, you know. So this particular ballad called Inca Love Chant was for sort of the mellow part of my album.
Well, we're going to hear that in a few minutes, but what we have first is a record that you recorded with a group called The Prime Element.
Oh, yes, that was another project that was done about 3.5 years ago. It's just was recorded in New York, but we never did able to get it released here. It's for an Argentine label. It's for Argentina. And the two principal people were Mr. Omar Clay, which is one of the drummers in Oom Boom, and Mr. Carlos Franzetti, which is a fine keyboardist arranger. And you'll see the arrangements of Carlos Franzetti, which is somebody that's going to plays in my group also. And this particular cut, you can see, has some classical and jazz influence, and well, you must try it. Okay, listen to it.
Let's hear it.